across the UK, across continental North America, and around the world on the internet by webcast and by podcast. My name is Howard Hughes, and this is The Unexplained. Hoping that everything is good with you in your world, whether you're in the Southern Hemisphere, you're starting to think about going into winter time, not yet though, whether you're in the Northern Hemisphere, and we seem to be sliding out of winter, but not yet here either. Here in London today, beautiful sunny day. It is almost like spring. I think the temperature is about 12 or 13 degrees, which is good for us at this time of year. Not cold at all overnight, but still the hint of storminess around, and they tell us that we might have another freeze coming. And don't forget, we've got about another 5 weeks of winter maybe to go here. And then, thank the Lord, things begin to turn round and they improve. Here in the Northern Hemisphere, but I'm sure that winter still has a few tricks up its sleeve, but that's the weather report, for what it's worth. Thank you for your emails. Keep those coming in. Keep the guest suggestions coming. And if the guest that you suggest is somebody who's not going to get me banned off the internet or fired from the radio, then, you know, I will investigate the guests. I'm looking particularly for podcast guests here. And, you know, we'll see what we can do. You've made some really good suggestions. Some of them we've had on the podcast and some of them we've had on the radio in the end. But, you know, it's all grist to the mill, as they say. Go to my website, theunexplained.tv. You can email me through there. And if you've made a donation to the online show, thank you very much for doing that. You know who you are. And you know, in these difficult and straitened times, how much that helps. So thank you from the bottom of my heart. Thank you to Webmaster Adam for his ongoing hard work on the show. Two guests from my radio show to catch up on this edition and keep them here for posterity. Number one, a catch-up with Jaime Maussan, ufologist in Mexico, a man, of course, around whom there has been a certain amount of controversy recently over those alien mummies that he presented. Two different stories in the last 10 days or so that seem to conflict or contrast certainly with each other. I'll give you both of them before I let you hear the conversation with Jaime Maussan about them. And Jaime is telling us that he's going to do another presentation if he can quite soon, so we'll watch that. So alien mummies first, update. And then most of this edition of The Unexplained is my interesting first conversation with Caroline McKendrick. You certainly liked her on the radio. She is the organizer, head honcho, I think, of SPI, which is Somerset Paranormal Investigators UK. Some great stories from Caroline McKendrick and a first appearance on the show here. Thank you very much to the person who suggested her. She will be back on the show. And if you have a good local ghost hunting or ghost investigation group or paranormal investigation group, and you've been doing some good work that you think people should know about, then, of course, I can consider putting them on the radio show or the podcast. But you've got to have at least a dozen good stories to tell and be happy to come on and be recorded or go live on air. You know, it's only me you're talking to. But as long as you can satisfy those criteria, you know, say 10 good stories, then we can certainly look at putting you on here. And I'm happy to do that. And I think we should be featuring more of the real people doing the real work on this show. So Caroline McKendrick is the second item. Okay, let's get into it then. Remembering, of course, that you can always contact me through the website, and you can always check out my Facebook page, the official Facebook page of The Unexplained with Howard Hughes. Starting with this, talking with Jaime Maussan, CBS News headline, aliens found in Peru are actually dolls made of bones, forensic experts declare. Aliens have not been discovered in South America after all, says CBS News. The doll-like figures, photos of which went viral online last year, are just that, dolls, according to scientists. The controversial artifacts were seized by Peruvian customs agents in October and intended for, quotes, a Mexican citizen, according to the Associated Press. Mexican journalist and ufologist Jaime Maussan brought similar unidentified objects in front of the Mexican Congress last September. We talked to him, of course, here about that, claiming that they'd been recovered near Peru's ancient Nazca lines and dated more than 700 years old. Actually, substantially more than that, I think. Now, a story that appears to conflict with that. From the Daily Star in the UK, new DNA tests have confirmed that the mystery Peruvian, quotes, aliens, currently housed in Mexico, have 28% dark matter in their DNA, having previously thought that the pair showcased to the world at the end of last year had 30% non-human DNA. Experts have apparently narrowed down what it is. Controversial journalist Jaime Mossan says the Daily Star, who claims to have found the aliens despite officials in Peru starting a legal challenge against him, took to social media, Twitter stroke X, to make the new DNA testing public. That is where we're at with those two stories. They seem somewhat to conflict with each other. I am baffled and confused, and I put that point to start this edition of The Unexplained to Jaime Mossan himself. Here's what he said.
How are you, Howard?
I'm very good, Jaime. I'm confused, because on one hand, we're being told that some of these figures that were being imported last year are fakes, or rather dolls. Let's not say fakes. That's an unkind word. And yet here we are getting news that there is something weird about the ones that you presented to the Mexican Congress. Can you clarify?
Yeah, you shouldn't be confused. Why? Because the Ministry of Culture found two handcraft bodies at the airport in El Callao in Lima. The man who sent these handcraft things told the Ministry of Peru that they were handcraft, they were artesanías. And they didn't listen. They wanted to analyze them anyway. And he said, I made it. That's Manuel Cáceres. I made them. Please give it back to me. No, they used them to say that everything else, what I presented in Mexico, what was investigated at the Ica University, is the same. Remember that there is a letter with 11 scientists from the university signing and saying that the bodies are real. They were biological. There are more than 50 scientists right now around the world who have said that these bodies are real. And now the Minister of Culture uses these handcraft things to say that everything is a fake. And all the media around the world immediately said, oh, the mystery is solved. Really?
Well, not quite all of the media, but I appreciate the fact that a lot of the media did say this, and I've read many stories to that effect. The ones that were identified as dolls, they were on their way to a Mexican citizen. Were they being sent to you?
Yes. Yes. No, they weren't. I didn't have anything to do with that. I didn't have to do anything with the others that were presented in Mexico. I have never taken anything from Peru to Mexico. These were handcraft that were sold to Mexican tourists in Palpa, and Manuel Cáceres sent them to send the mummies to Mexico for these people. And then the Minister of Culture said that it's the same thing. How can they? Come on, there is DNA. Can you get DNA from a handcraft thing? Can you have carbono? I mean,
I get entirely what you're saying. So what is going to happen? I mean, this story has been in our perception since last September or so. I know you're probably involved with it from much before that, but we were mostly aware of this from last September. What is going to happen next? Will you be making another presentation to the Mexican Congress? What are you going to do?
I'm going to Peru to clarify everything. I'm going to speak to the media there. I'm going to have a press conference. I'm going to present all the evidence, and even more, because as I told you last time, there are many more bodies and parts, and they are being analyzed right now, and it's possible that very soon I'm going to present one of them, probably in Lima, in Peru. And at the same time, I have to tell you that the Congress in Peru is going to have a public audience probably in March or April. Germán Tacuri, a congressman, have declared that twice, saying that there is going to be a public audience in the Congress of Peru to
analyze
all of this.
So you will make a presentation to them, Jaime?
I don't know. If they ask me to do that, I'm going to be very, very happy. We brought Germán Tacuri to Mexico, and he saw many scientists from his country saying that these bodies are real.
Okay.
How can the Ministry of
the
Culture
point,
say they are handcraft?
Yes. To leave my listener with is that you are going to hold another presentation yourself to clarify the issue. Just quickly, Jaime, and thank you for helping me again. When will this be?
It's going to be in the next 10 days.
Interesting. I mean, look, I'm not here to be the ringmaster and say something is correct or isn't correct. I don't know what these things are. I am fascinated by them. I have to remain professionally skeptical, and I know that a lot of you do too. because unless we get absolute copper-bottom scientific proof, and I know Jaime says we've got that, then what are we to believe? But I think we need to be watching this story, so I'll continue to check in on Jaime Musan. Let me know your thoughts. Now, for the rest of this edition of The Unexplained, somebody new to the show who was suggested to me by a listener, and I'm glad that person did, Caroline McKendrick from SPI UK, Somerset Paranormal Investigators UK. She has some great stories to tell, so we'll hear her story and her stories. This is Caroline McKendrick.
Thank you so much for inviting me to join you on your show.
Well, no, that's good. What I want to do is check in with different people working in different areas. And I know from personal experience that the west of England, and, you know, they used to call it in television terms the west of England, which is where you are near Crewkerne, is absolutely yes. replete with poltergeists and ghosts and spirits and all kinds, UFOs for that matter, and all kinds of stuff, isn't it?
You would not believe the amount of historic events that we have that's happened down here in the southwest. So it's no wonder that we're one of the main reported counties of the UK that is high with phenomena in, like you say, UFOs and ghosts and hauntings.
Well, listen, I'm always fascinated about what it is that makes people who have busy lives, which I know you do, want to get involved in this stuff. Is it a kind of release from day-to-day activity? Has it been a lifelong interest?
I think it's been a lifelong interest. It's come from experiencing things myself as a child and never really understanding what it was that caused it. So I guess I'm trying to find the answer to life, why it is we're all here and what happens to us afterwards.
Yeah, I think that's fair enough. I think a lot of us are on that journey, Caroline. A lot of people say that they experience things as a kid. I did. A lot of the people you'll hear appearing on this show regularly do. It seems to be something that if you're that way inclined, if you're sensitive and receptive to it, it gets you young. What happened to you?
Well, my parents bought a property in Weymouth that was four-floored Victorian place. It needed renovating. And my dad had recently been made redundant. And with the redundancy money, we bought this place with the intention to make it to a nursing home. Obviously, he started renovations as soon as we'd moved in to make it a bit, you know, living, be able to live in it. But things were happening way before any kind of stones were touched. And it just started happening on day one, really. And weird stuff like voices, knockings, bangings, taps, raps, that kind of thing. And then it kind of progressed a little bit more to TVs turning themselves off and over. Even down to my mum experiencing seeing a full-bodied apparition regularly of a lady in Victorian clothing.
Okay, and what did you know? I mean, you were very young then, perhaps you didn't find out, but what did you know about the history of that place?
We're still a little bit unsure what happened to it because it was a former private home originally when it was one of the big manor houses down this street. And then in later days, it had become like a home for men with no home to go to. So it was like a halfway house kind of thing, not for homeless people, but it was for people down on their luck. So I'm guessing it had a rich history and one that I haven't been able to research amazingly because obviously we've got people coming and going in that property when it was for people down on their luck. So you don't really have the census with the confirmation of names. So it's been quite difficult to research the history on that place.
And as a young person, what did you feel? Quite often these things come down to how we feel about them, doesn't it?
Well, my mum, she was always very good at telling us ghost stories of things that happened to her in the hospital that she used to work at on Portland and in Weymouth. So we weren't adverse to having a ghost story. So it had always been on my mind, what could this possibly be? And even at the age of 10, 11, 12, I was always still trying to find reasons why things would happen rather than being a ghost. So I knew back at that early age that when you opened the window and a door, obviously you had that pressure drop between the two rooms and it could cause the door on a further room to rattle. I knew that. So I did have the sense even at that young age to try and dispel things.
So you were a lot you were quite objective
that
about
I couldn't.
It.
Hmm. Yeah, I was objective. And I obviously have kept that talent later on in life. I do try to find reasonable answers. I think it's in your personal psyche that you tend to doubt things that you've experienced, and you question and you query, and you even gaslight yourself into thinking you didn't experience it, and you try to find reasons why this could have happened. Yeah, so I mean, that's with all of our team, really. Even though we've all experienced something together as a multiple within a group, we all look at each other and say, nah, that didn't really happen, did it? And you do try and still talk yourself out of it.
Right. So that goes all the way back for you when you were a kid. You tried to find rational explanations. But just to finish on the house that you were brought up in, and I asked you about how you felt, did you experience things like temperature drops and strange vibrations and that kind of thing?
Yes, absolutely. I think downstairs in the basement area, even though it was ground level with the back of the house, it was basement for the front of the house. It was where the kitchen and the staff used to work. So the old scullery, that was particularly a little bit weird. But again, you have to reason with yourself. Was it a little bit weird? Because the temperature being different with the lack of light that you would have got in the houses, in the rooms above. But that said, up in the attic, that was a really freaky area. And it wasn't somewhere that I liked to go very much, even though it was proper kitted out for living with a kitchenette and bedrooms. And it was warm and it had all the heating and everything that you would think a normal house would do. That was very strange up there as well. But I think that the place that we all felt a little bit more odd was in the main entrance hall and up the first flight of stairs into the private part of the house. Mm-hmm. That was really unusual. And that's where my mother used to see the lady, the Victorian lady.
So we can surmise that maybe she was, I mean, if this was some kind of community provided accommodation for people who were down on their luck, maybe that person you were seeing might have been, I mean, we can't know this, can we, but might have been some kind of nurse or guide there or somebody employed there to keep the place running.
Yes, or she could have been what would have been called the mistress of the house back in those days, the landlady or something. She didn't look, in my mother's description, to be poor. So she looked well-kempt.
Some of us, when we experience these things as kids, you know, say in later life, well, thank God I got out of there because it was haunted and it was scary and I'm glad I'm living somewhere else now where I don't have to experience those things. But not Caroline McKendrick, because you live in a haunted house, don't you?
Yes, we do. When I first bought this house, I walked in and it was a winter's day when I came to look at it. So an autumn day. And it was really depressing. The place needed a complete renovation and it was cold. There was no heating. But the sun came through that window and with it brought optimism and hope. And I thought, this feels like home and it feels comfortable and it doesn't feel odd. And there was nothing about it that felt odd. And then things started to happen. I think I thought at the time that it was my late husband that was coming to visit because it was similar things that we'd had after he passed away in the last house. But I think 6 months in, things started to take a different turn and you could hear a man coughing and we used to have objects flying around the place. That sounds a bit crazy to say it like that. I think I need to explain it better. We brought a grandfather clock into the home, and with that, the grandfather clock winder on New Year's Eve flew at such force against the wall that it took a big chunk of the newly decorated plaster from the wall. And it has done that again since, but we have tried to recreate how it's fallen down. We've tried to recreate how the projectile happened, and there is a little bit of a jutting out wall behind the back of the grandfather clock. And there was no way, we've tried to recreate this about 70 times, that we could get this to happen again. Because it keeps hitting the wall and coming forward, not going backwards. And that was New Year's Eve that happened. And since then, we have had that fly off once again when the dog was on his own and he yelped because it came flying at him when he was lying in the corridor. And another time we were going out for an evening for date night, my partner and I, and he came to collect the keys off of the cupboard next to the grandfather clock. And as he turned round to walk away, I actually saw with my own eyes the grandfather clock winder hurl itself just behind him as he walked past. So I said, stop. And he stopped and I said, look around. And he looked around and he said, oh, was that aiming at me? I said, no, because if it wanted to hit you, it probably would have. So we've just come to live with stuff like that happens in this house. We have worked out when we were renovating the property, where the grandfather clock is, was the original doorway into the lounge. So I don't know if it's upset somebody that everything's been moved around and the doorway is no longer there. And when somebody tries to walk through where they think the doorway was, is that causing the grandfather clock winder to projectile off? I'm not sure. We just live with it. There's loads of stuff that happens in this house. Loads. We've caught a woman's voice saying, I'm sorry, as if she was incredibly upset. We've had objects moving, all that kind of thing. So, yeah, apportations. My partner lost his sports watch for 2 months and then it appeared somewhere very odd that it could never have been. And we get a lot of that in this house. So even though it started out as just the normal paranormal great auntie Maud type of stuff, it has progressed in the last few months to being poltergeist activity. Oh, and it's incredibly weird that I was writing an article for the Haunted magazine on the poltergeists and what it is that they're, what behavior types. And I was reading out the magazine and we had a spat of things that happened as I was giving it to the editor and I was reading him some bits off of it. Yeah, we had some very strange stuff.
Now that's, it was almost as if
me writing this and reading it had actually manifested it to happen. So it's incredibly odd, but yes, we live in a haunted house that we just accept.
A poltergeist activity is interesting because a lot of research that's been done into places like Enfield, and I think the Sochi poltergeist in Scotland as well, suggests to us that the poltergeist activity is not centred around the place. Some of that stuff you talked about, the clock and what have you, is probably to do with the place. Or maybe the clock itself, who knows. But poltergeist activity is often connected with the people. So did you get the feeling that as you were writing that article about poltergeists, that you somehow brought it towards yourself?
We are looking at that option of bringing it to ourselves because we seem to have had, we've been incredibly lucky in our group to have had a good couple, I'd say three definite poltergeist cases, which will be coming out in a book. Sorry about the plug. We'll be coming out a book a bit later. But my partner, Martin Gibson, and I, we were seconded to work with the SPR. So that's the Society of Parapsychical Research. And we were dealing with a case with them and another team that we work very closely with called Paranormal Investigations UK. We were working in Essex with this. It was a year ago now that we went up there. And from the investigations that our team carried out and from the previous information that was given, all of the history logged, and then subsequent investigations after that, there's definitely something going on in the house, without a doubt, because of things that we've experienced and captured. But also, we think that there's poltergeist activity. So the SPR and anybody else who's dealt with serious cases within the poltergeist are looking at something called contagion. And that's where if you have visited the property or have a dealing with it, you can actually have this poltergeist come with you home. Although we didn't experience it, you know, for quite a while, I don't know if manifesting it was writing about this article where I was talking about it and I was relating things that had happened in this Essex building to my partner, Martin. I don't know, but when you look at the case in Essex, their property went incredibly quiet while ours became very busy. And then when ours stopped having activities, theirs started again.
So you think Martin brought that into your house?
No. I think us dealing with the case in Essex gave us the connection to the poltergeist in that property that's person censored, we think. And we think maybe we have to look into all opportunities that when this poltergeist is of a certain strength because it was increasing in its activity, can it possibly leave the house and go somewhere else to visit? We don't know. Huh. So this is what we're looking into.
That's astonishing. I don't know how you would begin to investigate that. And presumably you don't mind this presence being around you. It's not too malevolent. It's not something that you would want to exorcise or get cleared.
You can't get rid of poltergeist activity because it's energy form. It's never been a person on this earth. So it would be impossible to do so. But I know that if I was to panic and to be frightened, it would increase the energy level that this poltergeist may be able to work with, because obviously then I would be feeding fear, which creates more activity. So we just have to be rational and not think about it too much and be calm. And that way it will hopefully fade itself out. But it's the only time in the house that I've ever been scared with the first poltergeist activity, the day that I gave my article to Haunted Magazine. We had really weird stuff happen.
Okay, what's the worst thing the poltergeist did?
I walked through from the kitchen to the lounge after eating my tea, and there was nothing on the floor. The dog had walked through in front of me. On the dining room door, there was a jacket that had been washed, and it was hung up on a hanger, waiting to go upstairs that evening. And if you imagine that you put neck facing out from the door, don't forget doors are 6'6", are roughly around that kind of height. So it was fully on the door. There was no way that I could have brushed it and knocked it and not felt this jacket on me because it's incredibly heavy. So I walked through from the dining room, the hallway into the lounge, turned myself a quarter turn to sit on the chair. And there was this jacket spread out with its arms outspread. And the weird thing is that the arms had a twist in each of them. So they weren't led straight like they'd fallen and crumpled. They'd then twisted. And the neck was face down on the floor. And the hanger was hooked inside the jacket with the point hanging down towards the base of the jacket.
So in the nicest possible way, something possessed the jacket.
Well, I don't know if it's possessing it or if it apported it. So it removed it from where it was and placed it. Because it was too
perfect.
I will send you the photographs afterwards. You can have a look at them.
If you send me a picture of that, I can stick it on my Facebook page so that people idling away their time tonight can go to my official Facebook page and take a look at that. So we talked about you and your experiences, Caroline, and you've definitely declared your credentials here, that you are absolutely steeped in this stuff. Talk to me about the group that you're part of then. How did it form? Who's in it?
We have a 7-strong group at the moment, and I'd started a group back way back in 2010, and it's adapted. I don't think that we were headed on the right path at the time, so we all wanted different things, me more research and facts rather than the oohs and the ahs that we were looking for. So I formed my own team, which is this one, and then I met this wonderful lady called Donna. So Donna Lala, she is one of the main people who came into my group, and she said, I'm starting my own group. Do you want to blend them together? So we did. And for a good few years, we had a bigger group with lots of other people. But again, we didn't think that we were headed in the right path. So we separated the two groups back, and Donna and I are the originals that's left. Obviously, when I met my partner, Martin, 5.5, 6 years ago, he expressed an interest and said that he was interested in the paranormal as well. Now, he's a psychotherapist, so it's incredibly nice to have that kind of element within the team, that we can have the rationale and we can have somebody who can look at cases that we handle, private cases, and he's there to support and to look at the psychotherapy side of the cases that we deal with.
That's very useful. Now, some of the people who will invite you, I presume they do, into their homes because they think the home is haunted, I would guess some of those people are in quite a traumatized state if they don't understand what they're dealing with, are they?
Yeah, they are. They are what I would class as a vulnerable family, whoever it is that lives in a home. Some people could misinterpret what they think is happening, but I feel that our job as a team is to support them, to help them to understand what's going on in their house. And if there is things that's going on in their house, to investigate and come up with potential reasons why they're experiencing the things they are. And I always class it as being a little bit like a social worker, to be honest with you. You're there for the emotional support as well as the investigative side.
Mm. Because one of the things that people who deal in this, I mean professionally, tend to say is that anybody who comes forward and reports anything like this, they need to be sure that it's not something about them. They're not, how do I put this nicely? They're not imagining it, I guess, is the nicest way of putting it. That's an issue,
yeah,
isn't it?
I wouldn't say imagining it. We do have a criteria of things that we would ask in questions to establish this person's well-being. You know, we wouldn't necessarily go and visit someone's house who'd lost a partner within the last 6 months because it's too emotionally raw. Mm. Obviously, then we have to take account of any history, medical history that might be causing things. So we are quite stringent in the questions that we ask. Could any medication they be on be causing this? Any previous ill health? But we can't rule people out all the time just based on, you know, assumptions that they could be in imagining it. So we would go and meet them in person, do a pre-investigation. So we take readings, environmental readings of the property, and see if we can find anything that could give us a reason what might be going on. And then we would return at a later date to carry out a full investigation with part of the team.
And it's a very delicate thing to do, especially if people are traumatized by something that they think that they've got in their home. Without naming names or giving me specific locations, I don't expect you to do that. Can you maybe give me one, how do I put this? All right, give me a spooky story, something that has been pretty convincing to you that happened in an ordinary person or ordinary family's home that you were called into to try to investigate. Can you talk me through one of those without, you know, without naming the people?
Yeah, so I'll talk to you about the Sherborne case, Sherborne in Dorset. This was a house with a female and a male house owner. It was a rented property, and they lived there with the lady's two children. They were very young at the time, so I think one of them was seven and one was about 18 months. And then she was in later on in the investigation, because this was a long period that we observed this property for. The lady got pregnant with the gentleman's child. So it was a normal house with normal family, normal things going on. But the level of things that they were reporting was just incredible. And at that point, you think, well, is this... You have to be very aware in certain cases about hoaxing for coercive control, because I've come across this before. It seemed to be quite widespread who the activity was affecting. And it's high-end activity. So you're talking about poltergeist activity. You're talking about things moving, things appearing in the house that's never been there, seeing dark shadows, the whole works. And this resulted in us carrying out a number of investigations. So this case came through Tony Hayes from Paranormal Investigations UK that I've mentioned before, that we work with quite closely. They're based up the other side of Manchester, and I give him cases that come into me up there and vice versa for when he has them down south. Our team went in and did the first couple of investigations. We even had necessitated getting the SPR involved with one of the gentlemen who used to be there. He's passed away now, unfortunately. We then came back for a final investigation to see if things had been settled down or cleared with things that had been, you know, advised that they could do to try to reduce the activity. I was sat in the front room and I was with Amanda and the female of the house, and the door was shut onto the corridor, which is on my right-hand side. And then you walked up this corridor and there was the kitchen. And in the kitchen was the rest of my team, Martin, the male householder, and Tony from Paranormal Investigations. He was in there as well. Amanda was getting a little bit frustrated because we were waiting for the male householder to come back into the lounge so that we could conduct this investigation and do this experiment with him. So she got up to go and look for him. As she walked out, she shut the door. We carried on with listening and observing to things that were going on in the lounge. And my hair was yanked back really hard in a ponytail with such force that I let this yelp out. And as Amanda got into the kitchen herself, she felt as if the back of her leg in her calf was kicked really, really hard with force.
Gee.
And then Marion from the group, she literally threw up. She retched and threw up and started to have a nosebleed. And then you have Tony, who was pushed with force backwards, and Martin, who was hit hard and pushed into the wall. And it seemed to go from me in the lounge around the rest of the team like this. It was like, it was that quick. And everybody had this energy that went round from one to the next. And nobody has a clue to this day what happened. But it was incredibly forceful, whatever it was.
Sounds like a malevolent presence. What were you able to do, if anything, to reassure the people who live? Well, I don't know if they still do live there, but the people who were there when you went there.
Yeah, we just advised them to move out of the property. We knew that there was incredibly high EMF in that house, which is not good for a child with a developing brain. So we suggested they moved out.
Electromagnetic radiation, effectively.
Field, yeah.
Yeah.
So there was a pole outside the front of the house that was kicking out a couple of hundred milligauss, and that's at the very, very front of their house. And inside, in the hallway where most of the activity was witnessed, it was 64 milligauss on the stairs, and in the kitchen, it was incredible. I wouldn't class myself as a medium or anything like that, but when I was in the kitchen, I used to have incredible headaches and feel sick, and I couldn't stay in there for more than a couple of minutes. So the EMF in there was probably up to about 80.
Are you saying that there was like an electricity supply cable near them?
We don't know what it was. We actually asked the council if they could come in and check the wiring because there was obviously some kind of issue. And it has been known previously in paranormal cases that high EMF can cause you to have certain aspects of paranormal activity. For example, the hairs on your arms when they, stand up, that can be caused by high EMF. Paranoia, where you think that you're being watched by somebody, that can be caused by high EMF. Seeing black shadows, that can be caused by having EMF. And this is all to do with the effect that it has on the neuropathic in the brain and your reception of what it is that you're experiencing because of it.
Well, so I think that parapsychologists and others have been investigating those sorts of things for years. So you advise the people who lived in this place in Sherborne, and
yes.
I don't think I asked you. If I did, I apologise, but I don't think I did, you know, what kind of house it was. But you advised the people to get out of there.
Yes, we did. It was a semi-detached rental property. So it just looked like any other normal 1950s semi-detached property. In a very nice area in Dorset as well, in Sherborne.
Yes. I mean, I've read about Sherborne as a location connected with strange paranormal activity on many, many occasions. There seems to be something about Sherborne. My listeners in Sherborne can tell you that might attract it. So those people left, and I guess you lost touch with it, did you? Or were you able to find out what happened after that?
No, we've kept in contact. When they moved into the new property, we got a call almost within a few weeks to say that things were, you know, starting to happen. She didn't know if it was paranoia, concern, or if it really was happening. But we kind of thought that the paranormal activity, the poltergeist, was centered around the male in the house. Eventually he left and they separated, and she's not reported anything else since.
I think there's more research to be done about that, and neither you nor I are scientists. But I think there are people investigating those things about specifically the way that these energies appear And we don't know. I mean, it might be mind over matter for all we know, but these energies appear to centre on, you know, individual people. Recent investigation at a very famous location, and it's outside what they would have called the West. This is more definitely southwest, Bodmin, the Jamaica Inn there. Now, a lot of paranormal groups, people like that, they go there to check out what they can see, feel, and, you know, touch and hear. What happened to you there?
So this was our first team-only event, and my friend Corinne Besant, she works for Visit Somerset, but she's also the lead paranormal investigator for Jamaica Inn. So she had arranged a private event just for investigators only, and the whole team went. So she split the groups into two. Our team stayed upstairs for this part, and the other team was downstairs, and they were in the stable block. And she messaged me on the walkie-talkie to say, could you just go and have a look over the stable block in the bedrooms? And I think it's from 10 to 12. That I think that's the numbers. So I went up and I said, well, there's nobody there. We're all staying in those rooms and we've got the keys and there's nobody on the corridor. But as I was walking up to go and have a look, I heard a whisper of a female voice very, very clearly outside of bedroom 9. And I joked and I just put my hand up. I said, hang on a minute, whoever it is, I'll be back in a minute. Just got to go and check to see if there's anybody up the corridor. And when I was walking back the corridor, I could hear this loud noise and music, and it was getting louder. And I got back to room 9 and it appeared that the TV had switched itself on in room 9. So I messaged downstairs to Corinne and I said, Corinne, could you send somebody up who's in room 9? The TV's come on by itself. Explained what had happened to her. And we'd all kind of set the TV back to normal, turned it all off and carried on. And we went back to the bedroom that we were investigating. So that was bedroom 4 at this time. We walked into bedroom 4, me and one of the team. And I got poked as soon as I walked into the room and I went, oh, I just felt like someone poked me. Did anyone do that? And they said, no, we're all sat down and that's it. So I went and sat on the 4-post bed and I got poked again. I said, oh, I keep getting poked. I don't like this. What anomaly do we have in this bedroom? And one of the team was reading out what had happened and I got poked again. I said, oh, I just got poked again. Not best pleased with this. We didn't hear anything at the time, but when we went back and studied the recording, we could hear a female, after I got poked the last time, singing, oh, touch me. So we were kind of a bit shocked, and I double-checked with everybody, did you sing, did any of you make that noise? Nobody owned up to it. But my partner Martin, myself, both had body cams on that were running. There were 3 cameras in the room, all from different angles, and we had a sound equipment in the form of a handheld Zoom. We went home and analyzed, and everybody's mouth in the team was caught on camera, and nobody at any point was singing or making a noise. And we cannot find a rational reason why we had this female singing, apart from it being a spirit trying to communicate.
Now, listen, we've got 2 minutes left. I wonder if in about 90 seconds you could just summarise, and we will talk again, and thank you for doing this. What happened at the Shire Hall in Dorchester, a location I'm sure I've heard about before?
Oh, okay, because I know we're very short on time. Our team do this experiment called phone to phone, and we call one mobile from another, and we have both of them open so that they're on loudspeaker. We also play white noise in the background as a form of EMF to give energy that might be needed, perhaps. And we could hear children running around in Shire Hall. And we were giggling because they were laughing and running around. And we knew that the hall used to be used as a courtroom and children were brought with the families as a form of entertainment. So it's not unusual that they would be there. So we were talking and we said to them, if you can hear us, the box that's in front of you with the light that my voice is coming out of, if you can, push the red button, push the button, and it will turn off and we'll go away. And we had a child's voice very clearly come back and say, you do it. And then the phone dropped off and the call was cut. That was intense.
We need to talk again, Caroline McKendrick. If people want to read about you, I don't know, have you got a website?
We do, yes. It's Somerset Paranormal Investigators UK. Pop along the phone numbers there, the email numbers there. Also, I write for Haunted Magazine. You can read some of the activities that we have happened to us. So, yes, there's lots of different methods. Facebook, and also I'm new to Instagram now.
Caroline McKendrick will check in with her again. And don't forget, if you have or you know of an investigation group who have good speakers, you know, people who can put a good case across, and you have good stories to tell, then please get in touch with me through the website and I will look at putting you on here. You've got to have good stories and you've got to be happy about being either recorded or going live on the radio if we do it there. So get in touch with me through my website, theunexplained.tv. And of course, you can follow me on the Facebook page, the official Facebook page of The Unexplained with Howard Hughes. More great guests in the pipeline here at the home of The Unexplained. So until we meet again here, my name is Howard Hughes. This has been The Unexplained Online. Please, whatever you do, stay safe, stay calm, and above all, please stay in touch. Thank you very much. Take care. Bye-bye.